Hello, everybody. This is Patrick Attaway, and this is Demise of the Podcast, my podcast where I discuss writing. And today, I'm going to be discussing my book, Abnormal Poetry. This is my sixth book. It is my sixth book of poetry, if you're counting my second book, Disease of Ambition, which was both poetry and short stories, before the 2020 edition, of course. So, before I talk about abnormal poetry, though, and discuss poetry in depth, I'm going to be talking about Twitter, because this week on Twitter was crazy. I asked some questions that were kind of well-received, but also not kind of well-received. They were based on the fact that a few weeks ago, if not months ago, I asked the writing community of Twitter, if you had to choose between writing one great book or one bad book, the one great book would not make any money. The bad book would make all the money. Which would you choose? And of course, a lot of people said they would choose the bad book. And a lot of them justified it by saying, well, if I wrote the bad book and made the money, then I could live off that money and write good books. Then there was a question similar to that. Would you rather write one great book or a steady stream of good books? And most people said the steady stream of good books. A lot of it had to do with money. Here's the thing. I will never begrudge anyone for wanting to sell out. Selling out is not necessarily a bad thing. I firmly believe that if anyone criticizes you for selling out, they've never worked a shitty job in their life, because if you've never washed dishes or swept floors or had to deal with people, very hungry people before, this is all food related, then you probably would not understand the drive to sell out. This is not something that I really understood until after I got out of college. Because before I got out of college, I never really had a real job. I had jobs, in quotation marks. Gave guitar lessons. I worked around my family business a little bit. Not in an official capacity. But, you know, when you're in school and you want to make A's and you're dumb like me, you can't have a job and also work at the same time. Of course, I'm doing that now for grad school, but I don't know that I'm any less dumb than I was back then. However, I don't have such a bad job now that I would automatically decide to sell out. I have a comfortable job. I mean, if I lost the job, I would have a hard time finding a new one that had a similar amount of money that could pay me. Does that make sense? I would have a hard time finding another job that could match the salary I have now. That sounds like a smarter sentence than what I just said. But anyway, there's no shame in wanting to sell out. If someone offers you $1 million to do something ludicrous, well, most people would say you're crazy to not do that. Now, in most cases, this shit never happens. I mean, people treat these hypothetical questions seriously, though. And I understand their motivations as to why. Now, the first question that I asked this week was, if someone offered you $10,000, could you write a love scene that spanned 50 pages? Now, for the first 12 hours of this question, most people responded fairly well. And then I muted it, because that's what you do. Shortly after I muted it, people started taking offense to it, mainly romance and erotica writers. That's not to say that all romantic and erotic writers got offended, because most of the romance and erotica writers that I follow and follow me, they're nice people. They don't take offense to stupid questions on Twitter. But a few people retweeted me and they were upset because they thought I was denigrating romance and erotica, and there was a whole thing about, well, most of us have never made $10,000 for that, and blah blah. It's a hypothetical fucking question. So that sort of thing doesn't bother me. It surprised me. A lot about Twitter surprises me. I've been here a year and I have over 10,000 followers, and things just keep getting crazier. I expect that they'll keep getting crazier. But all that aside, I appreciate my followers tremendously, and I appreciate the people that I follow. No qualms there. You occasionally have bad apples. They don't bother me. I'll tell you why. I explained this in a reply to someone, but I have been a musician since I was 12. Technically longer than that, because I started playing music in school when I was like 11, but no one cares about school band. Therefore, when I started recording my own music when I was 13 and put out my first album when I was 15, I had already accomplished more than a lot of musicians had, especially in my age group, but older people as well. And I started making more and more albums until this year I released my 50th album. And I do this all under a pseudonym. And, you know, I'm no stranger to internet controversy. I have gotten death threats over my music before, so it doesn't really bother me. You know, maybe it would have bothered me when I was 15. In fact, it did bother me when I was 15, because when I put out that first album, I had friends that liked it. I also had friends who didn't like it, but that didn't bother me. What bothered me was that when I put this album out, there were a lot of people who were telling me that it either sucked or to go back and fix things, or that I needed a singer because it was instrumental stuff. They asked me if I was on drugs, just all sorts of things like that. Now, I used that inspiration to fuel the next few albums that I recorded. That is part of the reason why I started singing too, because people complained about instrumental stuff. They thought I was a one-trick pony. So I also put out several albums where I sang. And I enjoyed singing. I'm not a very good singer. Now, ironically, when people who had heard the instrumental stuff and heard me singing, despite the fact that I'm not a great singer, they'd say, oh, this is great. I think it was because it was great in comparison to the instrumental stuff that they had heard. From their perspective, of course, I am happy with everything I recorded from 2014 and onward. And I was in my 20s at that point, so I'd learned a lot. The next question I asked was pertaining to the devil. Now, if you listened to the podcast before, and I know some of you are listening for the first time, and normally I'm not this spicy, but lately I have been spicing things up a little bit on this podcast. I've been rambling a little bit more, talking about more things in my life or the internet. So, what was I talking about? If you've listened to this podcast before, you know I wrote a fucking book about the devil, basically. It's called Demise of the Trinity. I'm going to take a sip of water. This time, unlike the last episode, I have not made the mistake of not having a drink with me. And the whole thing about having water rather than my usual Coke Zero is that carbonated drinks actually inhibit your breathing. So, that's something I learned in chorus. If the devil, Lucifer, most people interpreted it as being Lucifer from the TV show, if Lucifer came to you and asked you to write a biography of him and put it in a good light, you know, put a positive spin on it a little bit, and also, go into it unbiased. Now, that's not what I exactly said. What I said was put it in a good light and unbiased. So, a lot of people were picky about that. That's another thing. People get really literal on Twitter. Again, does not bother me. If you look at my responses to those sorts of things, I am either very straight with people on what I meant, or I have a little fun with them. I don't mind doing that from time to time. Now, I don't believe in being a total asshole, but I do like having fun with people. Now, me being an asshole, in my from my perspective, would be being vindictive, calling someone names or insulting them personally. I actually screenshot one of the responses I got. I'll read it here in a second, just because it's funny to me. Now, don't go going up to this dude, because I blocked him, just because I don't like confrontation. I have blocked a lot of people. You should do it too. So, this was actually to the later tweet, so I'll save it. But there were some people who said that they would do it. There were some people who said, well, you're not being clear enough. That always happens, no matter what you tweet. And then there were people who said, absolutely not. A few of those people thought that I meant selling your soul. And it's funny what people interpret from a tweet when you don't say anything about that or use any of those words. It's amazing. So, the next tweet, and this was supposed to be the tweet of all tweets pertaining to this. If someone offered you $1 million, would you be willing to quit writing for a year? Writing is the process of coming up with ideas, putting them on paper. There were people who wanted to cheat the system. And let me tell you, if I was the millionaire and I offered you $1 million and you thought you could outsmart me, you wouldn't get that $1 million. No, you would not. Of course, this is a hypothetical situation, so there's no need to get pissy about it. Some people did, as always. But these hypothetical questions are stupid. They're designed to be stupid, because I wanted to see people's responses so badly. Oh my goodness. And it felt so good, because some people were like, yes, I need the money. Then some people said, no, I need writing to function. I need writing for mental health. I went through and I applauded those people, because for once, this was one of the questions where people were a lot more divided on what they wanted to do. And then there were the cheaters. The cheaters. The people who said, well, I'd write voice memos down. Not write, but record voice memos. You know what I mean. I would hire someone to take dictation. I would write in secret. I wouldn't tell him. Then there were people who were like, well, what do you mean? Do you mean I couldn't write anything at all? Do you mean I couldn't tweet? Do you mean I couldn't go on Facebook? Do you think I couldn't write a letter or write an email? Obviously, that wasn't what I meant. And I'll read you an example of that, as I said earlier. In fact, I'll just read it right now, because why keep you waiting? Why? So this gentleman responded, quote, unquote, writing is vague. Like, writing books, stories, etc., or keeping a personal journal or Facebook rants. If I had to give up my WIP for a year, sure, no problem. If I wasn't allowed to type out a sentence or two, it would be tough. Now, at that point, I'd seen a lot of responses similar to that. And if someone had said, well, I need to write for my job, even though they kind of misunderstood what I meant, I'd said, you can write for your job. It's no big deal. If someone said, can I email? I'd say, just because you asked, no, you can't. Because that's the kind of guy I am. So, I don't follow this guy. He didn't follow me. And the amazing thing about Twitter is that people come out of the woodworks when you have these liked and retweeted tweets. Normally, people who respond to my tweets are people that I follow and follow me, but when they get kind of popular, they they get out of control. It's like when I have one of those cool kids tweets where I say, hey, my cool kids list is getting out. Literally, the list that I have on Twitter where I have my favorite accounts and I can just see their tweets, it's called Cool Kids. People that I don't even follow say, hey, can I be a cool kid? I don't think they know what I'm talking about. I responded to this gentleman as such. I keep forgetting people who expect literal explanations sometimes read my tweets. I'm currently in talks with Twitter to allow annotations from my account so I can break it down despite that most of the people who responded got the meaning of quote-unquote writing. Sorry, he responded by calling me the biggest unprovoked prick on Twitter. And then that was the end of the conversation. Actually, I said I was sorry. I was fucking with this guy. So, should I feel bad for that? No, I don't feel bad for that. And I've just spent almost the entire podcast talking about Twitter. You're welcome. So, why did I ask those questions other than fodder for my amusement? Well, let me take a sip of water and tell you. I wanted to gauge what was actually driving a lot of the people in the writing community. I support everyone in the writing community who is nice and is an honest writer. If you're a jerk, I don't want anything to do with you. I probably have already blocked you. But anyone who shows me kindness, I try my best to show kindness in return, even if I get weird vibes from you. Although, now that I think about it, there was one guy. He was just weird, so I muted him, and I didn't follow him back. And then it didn't take long before he stopped replying to my tweets. So, where are we going in this podcast, people? Are we going to be talking about this book that you can't see me holding up right now with my face on it? It's called Abnormal Poetry. I released it last year, I believe in October, and it is the second most popular book I have put out from the first six of my books, of course. My novel is obviously a lot more popular than all of them combined, but Abnormal Poetry came out and I had reached a certain plateau or peak, if you will, in Twitter popularity, and people actually supported me. So that was nice. That was very nice, even though throughout my time on Twitter, people have said, oh, you write poetry. I don't read poetry. I don't read poetry. I don't like poetry. And I wanted to address that, and I kind of have, in the fact that I'm reading poetry aloud, and I've stated firmly, I believe in the Cornbread Poetry episode, if not other episodes as well, that poetry is meant to be read aloud. And if it's not read aloud, then you should be studied at it enough to read it silently and enjoy it. But if you don't enjoy poetry, perhaps you're not reading the right poems or poets. Or maybe it's just not for you. Poetry's not for everybody. I mean, I'm not a stickler for this shit. So, what's different about Abnormal Poetry than the other books? Well, it's all poems from 2019, with some from 2018 that were not in mediocre endings sprinkled in. The first two poems are actually from 2018, and they were previously published in journals. The first two were called She Always Says, which Bitch and Kitch published. That is a poem about my wife. And then 2DV was published by Danse Macabre. That is about a woman that I never met, and I'll explain more when I read it. First, I need some Burt's Bees because my lips are getting dry. How you doing, folks? You doing okay? I've done pretty well about not stopping the podcast for an edit, and I intend to keep it that way. Let's keep it laid back, shall we? Yeah, I'm applying the Burt's Bees to my lips. See, that wasn't so bad, was it? Not at all. She always says, the doctor labels her ever-present state of mind PTSD. Yet, her acronym swallows my OCD. The way she mentally paces around me and never stops forces me into quiet. There's no room for my words or suggestions when she gets going. What does that solve? But what am I supposed to do? If my love does not lessen the tension she wraps around my temples, I'd scream as I ran swimming into the sewers, trying to drown myself in human filth. My wife did not have the greatest childhood, and she has PTSD as a result. Don't yell at her, please and thank you. The next poem to DV is sort of a response poem. I mentioned in a previous episode that a gentleman he dated my wife before she and I met, and he wrote songs for her. They are obviously not together anymore, but is a fairly popular band. He has a girlfriend who is a model now, and he and my wife are still sort of friends. They've had an on and off again friendship, and I almost got to meet him. He almost came out and had brunch with us one day, but it wasn't to be. So I said, what if I wrote a song for his girlfriend, since he wrote two songs for you? And that made her laugh, of course. Mostly because my music sucks, but also, I decided to write a poem instead, and it got published. So yay me. She was with the band, a small shadow to cast the role of a redhead harlequin. Can I take you to dinner to win your affections? Oh, you're not joking. Well, okay, maybe tonight. Cold gin tears on a silk pillowcase erase the hole someone left, or plug it. That beauty, lips thinly red, this bank in my pocket might buy us a win. Wrote her a tune about the car she slept in and pretending to die just to live. Bed sheets you might share, wrinkle on the floor beneath painted nails. Sleepless nights like a bedless dream, writhing on the floor to a red tambourine. Slaps in the face and deleted memories, a pretty pale jester with a misery streak. All the questions about fidelity when you're both so pretty. Wake under faded flowers to pray. The storm fades away. Perfect in your livid dreams, vivid in fiery scenery. Owe each other a lifetime, not the occasional favor. Doesn't she deserve your attention if you bought that ring? Fantasy wavers, but commitment is forever. Yeah, that guy bought her, his girlfriend, an expensive ring, and she found out about it, and she made him sleep in his car, which, of course, he just went to a hotel room and came back the next morning. So, I'm going to take another sip of water before I read Wrapped Around the Barrel. Don't you love how my voice turns into Charlie Sheen after a while? This is actually one of my first narrative poems, and I've been writing a lot of those lately. I'm trying to tell a story within the poem. So, I have never been a gunslinger in my life. The scar on his right hand grows red when he spins the barrel over gravel, dirt, and sand. Even if he's in a town full of pine brothels with whores, piano players, and barflies, he looks off to see the sun meet the horizon because he's alone when the arms of a woman pull him to her breast and seize his hips and her leather legs. The man he seeks is the reason he'll never look in the glass windows or empty whiskey bottles. When he's at the table as the dealer breaks a deck, he'll keep a finger on that holster in case the others show up. just as he seeks our villain, those who fear the anti-hero come after this shootist because they know he's going to kill someone with those bruised bullets, and that turn the revolver on himself. There's no life in those dunes or high forest, because as Jesus said, he'll die by the same sword the Lord handed him in this war of a world. Broken nylon strings and countless weary voices sing songs about what should have been, but our favorite Rook falls off the board and into mythology as an outlaw when all he could do was survive. This next poem is called Sipping Low Key, and yes, I got that title from Goosebumps. Not the show or the book series, the song Goosebumps by Travis Scott. The longer I record, the worse I sound when I speak, so I'm going to be saying things like Goosebucks or Goosebunks instead of Goosebumps. You're just going to have to get used to it, because I've already told you I'm not very bright. I must give these burdens away, be anything but a funny man. I can't hear the screaming rain, it's burning pavement, melting the street. Nothing I say will chase the facts away, this hollow life won't spin out. All I know is what you forgot, it's what I have, but not enough. All the lies the young sungs said to you. They're pulling up your skirt to show you around. I'll cover your back from their hate. It's melting dance floors and a burning stage. There's not anything to gain, but nothing to lose. And not enough love for us now. Hear the screams. We're dying off. Feel the heat melting us. Our tortures aren't in dollar signs. Real life is built on lies. That poem is about my wife. And for a while, she was trying to get back into managing musicians as she did before she and I met. And musicians are not always the nicest or the most reliable people in the world. And unfortunately, when you're a woman in that industry, you're going to get sexually harassed. That's not okay. It happens, though. So, it doesn't matter if you're married, ladies. Men are still going to hit on you because they're fucking disgusting. Not all men. But, you know what? If you're a married guy or you're a married lady and someone hits on you, just remind yourself that people are trash. The next poem is called Acting Brilliant. I'd wander on set and act like the lines don't matter as much as me. A method actor in a vacant scene with only a cue card to guide. I'm a liar, I'm a fraud, I'm a debt to the world our Lord and Savior refused to pay. The secret to failure is to care about the future and dread tomorrow. Pull me from the floor, I'm the performer, a pretender in the camera's eye. My method is to placate the fears of an audience who'd rather sleep with the dead. I'm a lie, I'm a scam, I'm a defiance in the face of the lamb. Break the bread, drop the lead, let me drown in glamour and die. Pretend we're others and forget our problems. Forgive me for being alive. So, the hardest part about doing these podcasts is picking the poem to read next. And I just flipped to it. So let's go with Bathtub Sobbing. But I'm going to take a little sip of water first, if you don't mind. See, that wasn't so bad. An old tune plays like I'm back against the noose. My mind pushed me against. No woman, daddy, or mommy made me cry as much as me. I'm a slave to my own sadness. Panic attacks threaten me when all I need is to turn off the crooner in his piano. But I grew so used to longing that I neglect what I wanted, so I'll never be satisfied until I'm over. This next poem is called RW, and you'll probably know what that stands for once I read it, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you that it stands for Robin Williams. When Robin Williams passed away, I cried for 2 hours straight. Every son without a dad probably thought of you as their father figure at some point. You dressed up in a mask and wig just to see your kids and our daddies find other wives and made new kids. We didn't hope our parents would come back together. When there was the TV with your smile and red face to remind us we meant something when we laughed. My girlfriend said you were dead. It was suicide. When I'd been thinking of death and ending my depression, you gave it up. I'd cried for an hour when I didn't think I could cry anymore. You proved there was still something in me that wanted to hope. So, the next poem is called Nostalgia Days. Jesus. Man, that fucking Robin Williams poem is a bummer. All these poems are fucking bummers, man. Do I need to read the next one? You know what? Let's have a break, shall we? There's going to be another episode for this book. Okay? Okay. So, I am going to check Twitter because I posted a tweet while the first part of this episode was exporting because I had to take a break in the middle of it. Of course, you won't know that if you're listening. So, we got some responses. First response comes from Meg Softon. What are you talking about? Remember this from earlier? Almost no makeup and pandemic hair. So I don't want to hear it. It's getting real now. So it's not really a question. Okay. Next is from Regray. Specifically at L Regray. What's your favorite potato? Well, favorite potato. Let's see. A big fan of the French fry. A little ketchup. Disco fries, which is melted cheese, gravy. Maybe some other things. I don't remember. It's been a while. What is the purpose of having a COVID-19 test if you can be uncontactable with someone who has it tomorrow? The test would have been have to be redone. That is from The Adventures of Cardigan. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to that question because I'm not smart. How many marshmallows, Matt is asking this, how many marshmallows can you fit in your mouth? I'm not a big fan of marshmallows. In fact, my mother, for Easter, thankfully Easter was spent separately because God, I was dreading Easter this year. Every year, I love my mother to death. She gives us this Russell Stover's candy that has marshmallow in it, and it is disgusting. And I don't like Peeps. I did when I was 8, but, you know, I've developed taste buds now. So I'm not going to eat your fucking marshmallows. So Jake asks, what popular book or book series have you not read and why? I will give you an answer immediately, as I would with any question, because that is the kind of person that I am. So here's your answer right now at this moment. Game of Thrones. That's a series that I've never read. Wheel of Time. Hunger Games. Twilight. 50 Shades of Grey. I own the first book and I couldn't get past page 6. I was just curious. Mostly because Bret Easton Ellis mentioned E.L. James in an interview and, you know, whatever. I don't really care for book series. I prefer to have one good book. That makes me an elitist snob, I know. Anyway, what is the first cuss word that comes to mind when you're tuning your guitar and a string snaps? First of all, Lewis, bro, I appreciate your friendship thus far. But you have gone over the line with this question. Here's the thing about guitar strings. They're dangerous. So if one pops off, it could land in your eye. And that's not good. I can't handle it. So, it's usually fuck or shit or god damn it. Then Katie says, "You're beautiful," which is not, that's not a question. Am I liking the, I'm slipping. I'm supposed to be liking these tweets as I'm answering them. And I'm so sorry, people. I'm trying. So, Strange Light asks, who made the Voynich manuscript? I don't know what the Voynich manuscript is. That's a good question. Voynich manuscript. A Voynich manuscript, this is from Wikipedia, is an illustrated codex handwritten in an unknown writing system. Well, that looks interesting. I don't know. I'm not smart enough for these questions, people. Okay, so the next question comes from one of my favorite accounts. By the way, I just realized I alienated everyone before. Get the fuck over it, okay? You're all great. I like Kendall. She's cool, okay? Chill the fuck. Calm down. Sit back down. I don't want to have to get in this tone with you again. Sit. Thank you. Kendall asked, would you ever send a copy of one of your books to Joe Exotic? Well, I had not considered that until now. I don't think he'd want to read it. I don't know if Joe Exotic reads. He doesn't seem to me to be the kind of guy who sits down and reads. I know that he likes Orange is the New Black. I just listened to the Wondery podcast. Well, I finished it. I'd listened to half of it, gotten pissed off and turned it off and then came back to it today. There are some blatant lies in that podcast that the host tells and perpetuates, and some of his interviewees tell and perpetuate about Joe. Now, is Joe perfect? No. I'm obviously a big fan if you've ever looked at my Twitter feed in the past 2 or 3 weeks or whenever I first watched Tiger King, and I fell in love with Joe Exotic. But anyway, I'd love for him to read my stuff. I'd love to write him something besides a letter. I'd write him a poem or a song, and he'd probably claim ownership of the song, which I would kind of be okay with, honestly. It'd be flattering, mostly because I can't sing. So Richard King is asking, what do you think about the number 2 draft pick? A big fan of the number 2 pencil. So the whole thing about pencils is they're kind of obsolete in a sense because they're lead pens. And for work, I use a Pilot pen, one of the precision ones like my mom used when I was coming up in the world. So number 2 pencils, I don't have a problem with them, but if you're in a jam and you have nothing else to write with, they're quite reliable, I think. Let me refresh real quick. No one else is asking me questions at this time. If you ask me a question and I don't get to it now, well, I'll answer it in the next podcast if I remember. But until then, I'm so glad that you're listening to me. Thank you. I love you and have